Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Monday, March 11th, 2024. I'm your reader, Catherine Moyers. The headline from today's paper is Strange Bedfellows, Iowa Vape Bill Drawing Unusual Coalition of Opponents by Tom Barton. Dateline Des Moines. A bill supported by the tobacco industry that would ban retailers from selling vape products not listed on a state-approved registry has united two disparate groups in opposition, vape shops and public health advocates. The companion legislation, House Study Bill 682 and Senate File 2402, would require retailers, distributors, and wholesalers who sell vapor products in the state to put them on a new registry. Retailers could sell only products listed on the registry, which would be limited to those the U.S. Food and Drug Administration has approved for sale. The registration fee is $100 per product. Those that violate the provisions would be subject to a $300 a day penalty. Money collected from fees and penalties would be deposited into a trust fund to be used for substance abuse disorder treatment and prevention and tobacco prevention, cessation, and enforcement. At first blush, the bill seems to close a loophole leveraged by e-cigarette manufacturers and distributors. Before manufacturers can sell new e-cigarette products, they must submit an application to the FDA to market the products. The FDA then can either grant their application, at which point they can sell their products indefinitely, or the FDA can deny their application, at which point they must cease selling them altogether. But because of the lengthy time it takes the FDA to process applications, or because of legal challenges to denials, manufacturers and distributors keep their products in the marketplace until they receive a final answer. Since 2020, 26 million tobacco products, the vast majority of which are vapor products, have been submitted for FDA approval. To date, the FDA has authorized just 23 e-cigarette products and related devices, all of them tobacco-flavored, while rejecting more than a million applications. And only three brands, all made by tobacco companies, have received FDA marketing authorization. Manufacturers have challenged the denials in court and use a variety of legal maneuvers to delay agency action. Most e-cigarette applications fall into limbo of having received approval or denial to market their product. Without the former, the products cannot be legally sold in the United States. But as a result, thousands of e-cigarette products, including flavored products popular among youth, are being sold in Iowa and across the country without proper FDA authorization. The FDA has not aggressively pursued enforcement actions against manufacturers who either never applied for FDA approval or who did but persist in selling products that have not been approved. The tobacco industry-backed registry law, which mirrors those passed and being considered in other states, is purportedly intended to fill the enforcement void left by FDA inaction and inability to control the tumultuous vaping market more than 3 years after the agency declared a crackdown on youth-friendly flavors. Most of the unauthorized disposable vapes being sold in the United States, such as Elf Bar, come from China in sweet and fruity flavors that have made them a favorite nicotine product among teens. Hundreds of new varieties appear each month, the Associated Press reported. The influx has upended the FDA's regulatory model. Instead of carefully reviewing individual products that might help adult smokers, regulators must now somehow claw back thousands of illegal products sold under the radar. Public health advocates say lawmakers should carefully consider the public health implications of the bill and evaluate whose interests it advances. The American Cancer Society is registered opposed to the bill, as is CAFE, Clean Air for Everyone, Iowa Citizens Action Network, an organization that advocates for tobacco control policies. The American Heart Association and Iowa Primary Care Association are registered undecided. Opponents argue the bill does nothing to reduce youth consumption and instead benefits tobacco companies. At the end of the day, this bill will do nothing to reduce youth consumption and nor adult use, likely, said Teresa Harms, a lobbyist for CAFE, C-A-F-E, Iowa Citizens Action Network. We see it as an industry bill that does nothing other than help tobacco companies increase their market share and ultimately their profits. If serious about reducing youth vaping, lawmakers could consider advertising bans, taxing vape products the same as tobacco products, and requiring a retail permit fee, Harms said. Impact on retailers. Corey Haffiel, owner of Central Iowa Vapors, which has stores in Cedar Rapids and Iowa City, said the bill would eliminate 99% of the vapor products on the market and force him to close his 15 stores, putting 80 workers out of a job. It would over-regulate us to the point where we can't conduct business, Haffiel said. We're not like a convenience store. You take a handful of items out of a convenience store, they're going to be able to continue to sell gas and be able to continue to sell soda, all of those snacks and things. He said the industry is frustrated by FDA inaction and is advocating for fair regulations that allow for vaping products to remain on the market while ensuring customer safety. He said he regularly meets with manufacturers and visits their facilities, including in China, and requests information and documentation that their products have either been approved, denied, or pending review by the FDA. Haffiel emphasized the importance of addressing youth vaping, but believes the government should focus on holding social media giants accountable for promoting vaping products to minors and work with the industry to promote tobacco harm reduction and support products proven to be safer than tobacco. Haffiel and Sarah Linden, owner of Generation V in Council Bluffs and Davenport, said vape users will find other ways to get their product if it is unavailable in their stores, whether online or just across the border in neighboring states. If this bill goes into effect, businesses like mine, because we are good actors, we will close, Linden said. But there's going to be stores that don't, and then they're going to be selling whatever illicit products to whatever age group, including potentially teens. Where we screen and only sell to 21 plus, she said, is just a 10-minute drive across the border to Illinois or Nebraska from her shops in Davenport and Council Bluffs, where those states have no intention of passing these bills. What supporters say, David Scott, a lobbyist for tobacco giant Altria Group that's pushing the bill, said the measure prevents illegal products from overseas popular with youth. China has over 50% of the products that are illegal, Scott recently told a House Ways and Means subcommittee. 3 out of 5 youth brands are illicit because they are still being brought in. Gregory Conley, Director of Legislative and External Affairs for the American Vapor Manufacturers, said the FDA uses U.S. Customs and Border Patrol to stop illegal products before they enter the United States and conduct inspections and issue civil penalties to manufacturers and retailers of illegal products. The FDA, with their $712 million budget, has decided, oh yeah, we're just going to only target specific products that have youth use problems, he said. That's something you could do in this bill. But just saying all these products have to be banned? Terrible, terrible policy. There's a reason why Barclays and Goldman Sachs and Altria investors are so interested in this policy. Both Barclays and Goldman Sachs have said that one way for Altria to recover their failing cigarette sales is to put people like Haffiel and Linden out of business. Conley said the bill imposes a confusing and complicated registration scheme that has been challenged in courts in other states. The FDA in 2016 deemed e-cigarettes to be tobacco products like traditional cigarettes, subject to agency review under the Tobacco Control Act, and said manufacturers of the products would need to apply for approval to continue selling them. It initially considered e-cigarettes as having some promise in helping adult smokers transition from conventional cigarettes, but faced pressure from anti-smoking groups to restrict flavored e-cigarettes amid a rise in youth vaping. Conley said the FDA has not released a comprehensive list of products that have received denials or injunctions, making it difficult to retailers and law enforcement to know what is legal. Instead, he suggested the legislation be amended to prohibit the sale of products that have not submitted their ingredients to the FDA. Tony Phillips, a lobbyist representing tobacco company Reynolds American, called the bill a reasonable approach to limit the sale of illegal products. "Yes, it's a difficult process through the FDA. We've had our own challenges with it," Phillips said. "But even if the registry completely weeds out e-cigarettes that never applied through the FDA process or that have received denials, tens of thousands of products can still qualify because of the FDA backlog. To register with the state, a manufacturer would have to provide proof of marketing authorization or a similar order from the FDA, a pending application that remains under FDA review, or a court order was stayed by either the FDA or a federal court. Only those products that have been appropriately entered into the registry could then be sold in Iowa." Mike Triplett, a lobbyist representing Iowans for Alternatives to Smoking and Tobacco, said removing all flavored vaping products from the market will only increase cigarette sales, cost Iowa taxpayers millions, shutter hundreds of small businesses, and throw Iowans out of work. A 2021 study conducted for the U.S. vapor industry estimates the Iowa industry employs 752 people, generating $37.5 million in wages and a direct economic output of roughly $127.8 million. What's next? The House and Senate bills were approved by subcommittees and will be heard by the Ways and Means Committees in their respective chambers. "My big concern is public safety, making sure that these products that people are consuming is safe in the marketplace," said Representative John Forbes, Democrat of Urbandale, who served on the House subcommittee. "My other concern is, you know, passing legislation here that has an impact on businesses here in the state of Iowa. People are going to still vape regardless, but I'd hate to have us pass legislation that's going to affect jobs and, you know, viable ongoing businesses that could be out of business or severely restricted in sales." Republicans signed off on the bills to continue the conversation and work on possible amendments to the legislation. Also from the front page, country's warmest winter on record already over. Normally chilly locales never saw temperatures fall below zero during lost season, by Seth Bornstein. Across much of America, and especially in the normally chilly north, the country went through the winter months without, well, winter. In parka strongholds Burlington, Vermont, and Portland, Maine, the thermometer never plunged below zero. The state of Minnesota called the last 3 months the lost winter, warmer than its infamous year without a winter in 1877 and 78. Michigan, where mosquitoes were biting in February, offered disaster loans to businesses hit by lack of snow. The Great Lakes set records for low winter ice, with Erie and Ontario essentially ice-free. For a wide swath of the country, from Colorado to New Jersey and Texas to the Carolinas, spring leaves are arriving 3 to 4 weeks earlier than the 1991-2020 average, according to the National Phenology Network, which tracks the timing of plants, insects, and other natural signs of the seasons. Long-term warming combined with El Nino conspired to make winter not show up in the U.S. this year, said Yale Climate Connections meteorologist Jeff Masters, who co-founded the private firm Weather Underground. Master said he was bitten by a mosquito in Michigan this winter, which he called crazy. On Friday, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration confirmed that the winter of 2023-24 was the warmest in nearly 130 years of record-keeping for the United States. The lower 48 states averaged 37.6 degrees, which is 5.4 degrees above average. This is just the latest in a drumbeat of broken temperature records, national and global, that scientists say is mostly from human-caused climate change, from the burning of coal, oil, and gas. And it is the warmest U.S. winter by a wide margin. The past 3 months were 0.82 degrees warmer than the previous record set 8 years ago, which is a pretty good leap above the previous record, said Karen Gleason, chief of monitoring at NOAA's, NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information. Last month was only the third warmest February on record, but Iowa blew past its warmest February by 2 degrees, while parts of Minnesota were 20 degrees warmer than average for all of February, Gleason said. On February 11th, Great Lakes ice cover hit a February record low of 2.7%. A strong ridge of high pressure kept the eastern United States warm and dry, while California kept getting hit with atmospheric rivers, she said. The European Climate Agency, Copernicus, earlier this week, said it was the warmest winter globally, mostly due to climate change, with an added boost from a natural El Niño, which alters weather worldwide and provides extra heat. In the past 45 years, winter has warmed faster in the United States than it has worldwide, with the lower 48 states' winters now averaging 2.2 degrees warmer than in 1980, according to analysis of NOAA data by the Associated Press. That's probably because land warms faster with ocean, and much of the United States as land and most of the globe as ocean, Gleason said. While it is still getting warmer in the United States since the 2000 rate of extra warming has slowed a bit, NOAA data shows. Winter weather expert Judah Cohen of Atmospheric Environmental Research, a commercial firm outside Boston, blames Arctic amplification, which is how climate change has made the Arctic warm 3 to 4 times more than the rest of the globe and seems to shift weather patterns further south. As the Arctic warms faster, the jet stream, which moves weather systems across the Earth, wobbles and weakens. That means the cold air trapped at the top of the planet, called the polar vortex, escapes its normal confines and drifts elsewhere, bringing short plunges of frigid air that temporarily counteracts the overall warming trend in places, Cohen said. That happened briefly in January when winter just made a cameo appearance in the lower 48, Cohen said. But most of the time this year, when the polar vortex went wandering, it hit Europe or Asia with bursts of icy air, not the United States, so there wasn't an offsetting effect on winter American temperatures, he said. Boston never even got a sniff of single-digit temperatures this year, with a winter low of 14 degrees, a record for lack of deep cold. And snow? Forget about it, at least in the east and north. In Fort Kent, in far northern Maine, lack of snow canceled an annual dog sled race. The town had had 46.8 inches of snow this year, as of last week, a bit more than half as much as usual, the National Weather Service said. Snow cover in the United States in February was the second lowest on record, and third lowest in December, with only January above normal, according to the Rutgers Snow Lab. There's consequences to warm winters, said Teresa Crimmins, director of the National Phenology Network. Warm winters can also lead to earlier, longer, and more abundant pest seasons because populations weren't knocked back by cold, Crimmins said. As well, the allergy season can be worse, starting earlier, lasting longer, and resulting in more pollen in the air. Because it's warmer, trees and flowers may bloom early. Washington's cherry blossoms are predicted to peak about 2 weeks earlier than they did in 2013. Early blossoming can screw up intricate timing with the pollinators and birds. Turning to page 3, we have this story titled, White Flag Comment Draws Rebuke. Pope's spokesman denies remark was a call for surrender, by Susie Bland. Dateline Kiev, Ukraine. Ukrainian and allied officials Sunday criticized Pope Francis for saying that Kiev should have the courage to negotiate an end to the war with Russia, a statement many interpreted as a call for Ukraine to surrender. The foreign ministers of Ukraine and Poland, a vocal ally of Kiev, condemned the Pope's remarks, and a leader of one of Ukraine's Christian churches on Sunday that Only the country's determined resistance to Moscow's full-scale invasion, launched by Russian President Vladimir Putin on February 24, 2022, had prevented a mass slaughter of civilians. In an interview recorded last month with Swiss broadcaster RSI and partially released on Saturday, Francis used the phrase, quote, "the courage of the white flag," unquote, as he argued that Ukraine, facing a possible defeat, should be open to peace talks brokered by international powers. Quote, "Our flag is blue and yellow. We live, die, and win under it. We will not raise other flags," Ukrainian Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba posted on Sunday on X, formerly known as Twitter. Polish Foreign Minister Radek Sikorski tweeted, "How about, for balance, encouraging Putin to have the courage to withdraw his army from Ukraine? Peace would immediately ensue without the need for negotiations." In his tweet, Kuleba urged the Holy See to not repeat historical mistakes, as he alleged that the Vatican didn't do enough to resist Nazi Germany. Yet he also invited Francis to Ukraine, saying the Pope's visit would show support for more than 1 million Ukrainian Roman Catholics, more than 5 million Greek Catholics, all Christians, and all Ukrainians. The head of Ukraine's Greek Catholic Church, Archbishop Slastoslovich Sevchuk, said Sunday that surrender isn't on the minds of Ukrainians. Ukrainians are exhausted, but it stands and will endure. Believe me, it never crosses anyone's mind to surrender, even where there is fighting today. Listen to our people in Kherson, in Zaporizhia, Odessa, Kharkiv, Sumy, Shevchuk said, while meeting with Ukrainians in New York City. He mentioned the regions that have been under heavy Russian artillery and drone attacks. Shevchuk also spoke of the brutality of Moscow's invasion, referencing the town near Kiev, where Russian occupation left hundreds of civilians dead in the streets and in mass graves. He argued that the gruesome scenes seen in Bucha would have been just an introduction if not for Ukrainians' fierce resistance as Russian troops marched on the capital in February 2022. Vatican spokesman Matteo Bruni on Saturday clarified that the Pope supported, quote, "a stop to hostilities and a truce achieved with the courage of negotiations," unquote, rather than an outright Ukrainian surrender. Bruni said the journalist interviewing Francis used the term white flag in the question that prompted the controversial remarks. "I think that the strongest one is the one who looks at the situation, thinks about the people, and has the courage of the white flag and negotiates," Francis said. Now turning to the digest column. Record-setting storm pounds South Carolina. Charleston, South Carolina, Dateline. A record-setting rainstorm flooded parts of Charleston, South Carolina on Saturday, requiring emergency responders to help some people get out of high waters. The National Weather Service in Charleston reported that 3.63 inches of rain doused downtown Charleston on Saturday, shattering the one-day record of 1.43 inches from 1948. The 1.95 inches of rainfall recorded at Charleston International Airport broke a record of 1.13 inches set in 1998. The pounding rain in the coastal city came coupled with a morning high tide. India announces trade deal with EU countries. Dateline, New Delhi. India signed a trade agreement with Iceland, Liechtenstein, Norway, and Switzerland on Sunday that includes a commitment of $100 billion investment and creating 1 million direct jobs in India in the next 15 years, officials said. India, on its part, committed to reducing import tariffs on industrial products from the four European countries that comprise the European Free Trade Association, or EFTA. The landmark agreement between India and EFTA is set to bring significant economic benefits, such as better integrated and more resilient supply chains, new opportunities for businesses and individuals on both sides, leading to increased trade and investment flows, job creation, and economic growth, said an EFTA communique. Briefly, Portugal. An exit poll in Portugal's general election Sunday predicted 29-33% of the vote for the centre-right Democratic Alliance, a grouping led by the Social Democratic Party. The centre-left Socialist Party gathered 25-29%, the poll indicated. Military crash. A National Guard soldier from New York who was seriously injured in the crash of a helicopter flying over the U.S.-Mexico border remained hospitalized Sunday while authorities released the names of three who died. Chief Warrant Officer Casey Frakowski, 28, and Chief Warrant Officer John Gracia, 30, both with the New York National Guard, and Border Patrol Agent Chris Luna, 49. The cause of crash remains under investigation. Arkansas. Three people were killed and several others injured early Sunday when a shooting broke out at a private party in Arkansas, police said. A man and woman, who police said were acquaintances of the shooter, were killed, police said. The shooter also died. New Hampshire. A backcountry skier died on New Hampshire's Mount Washington in icy conditions, officials said Sunday. At least two people were rescued during a search that extended through a stormy night and into Sunday morning. Whale stranded. Authorities were working to assist a 70-foot beached sperm whale that was stranded Sunday on a sandbar off Florida's Gulf Coast. The Venice Police Department said the whale was still alive. And London. Nearly three dozen bodies were removed from a funeral home in northern England, and a man and a woman were arrested Sunday on suspicion of fraud and preventing a lawful burial, police said. Humberside Police announced the development after 5 days of investigation at three branches of Legacy Funeral Directors in Hull and East Yorkshire. Now in entertainment briefs, Paltrow had difficult relationship with stepkids. Gwyneth Paltrow used to have a difficult relationship with her stepchildren. The 51-year-old actress became stepmother to Brody, 17, and 20-year-old Isabella when she married TV producer Brad Falchuk in 2018. She says that even though she now thinks of them as her own, she had to learn a lot in the early days. Speaking at the Visionary Women's International Women's Day Summit, she said, "The path to here was really rough. It's almost like you have to embody the spirit of the sun and just give and not expect anything back. I just learned to try to just keep shining like the sun and never keep score." The Goop founder was joined by political activist Nicole Levant, who said that when she became a stepmother herself, she had to constantly find her own identity. Avant said, "I kept feeling that my identity was being challenged every single day, and I wasn't trying to be their mom, but all of a sudden I was the girlfriend that they loved and they wanted their father to marry." And this from Pamela Anderson, "I want to challenge beauty." Pamela Anderson wants to challenge beauty with her look. The 56-year-old actress recently adopted a makeup-free approach, explaining that she wants to flip the script on the beauty industry. The former Baywatch star told CR Fashion Book, "When I was at Paris Fashion Week, people asked me about that a lot, and I think, well, I was doing it for me. Can I walk out the door like this? Like, I'm fine the way I am, and I just didn't want to get into the whole glam thing and play the game." Anderson's agents and her kids were initially hesitant about her makeup-free appearance, but the actress has actually doubled down on the idea in recent months. Anderson shared, "My agents and even my kids were like, 'Mom, you can't. You need the glam team.' And I said, 'The fact that you guys are saying that to me makes me not want to do it more. I'm going to do a fresh face, no makeup, not pretend no makeup.' And I just felt free, and no one looked at me and went, 'Ah.'" You are listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Monday, March 11th, 2024, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. There are no obituaries, so we will turn to the sports page. The first thing we'll do for the sports is the NBA and Monday's games. Charlotte at Detroit at 6 p.m. Phoenix at Cleveland at 6:30 p.m., Dallas at Chicago at 7 p.m., Golden State at San Antonio at 7 p.m., Toronto at Denver at 8 p.m., and Boston at Portland at 9:30 p.m. And Tuesday's games are Philadelphia at New York, 6:30 p.m., Indiana at Oklahoma City at 7 p.m., Washington at Memphis at 7 p.m., Houston at San Antonio at 7:30 p.m., Boston at Utah at 8 p.m., Milwaukee at Sacramento at 9 p.m., and Minnesota at the L.A. Clippers at 9 p.m. Also in college basketball on ESPN, ESPN2, and ESPNU beginning at 6 p.m. live. Tonight's conference tournament action includes the Horizon League semifinals on ESPNU and ESPN2, the Sun Belt final on ESPN2, the SoCon final on ESPN, and the West Coast Conference semifinals on ESPN and ESPN2. Now we'll turn to the front page of the sports section and this story. Clark Sparks Hawkeyes comeback. Number 3 Iowa outlasts Nebraska in OT for third straight Big Ten title. Dateline Minneapolis. Caitlin Clark overcame a cold start to score 30 of her 34 points after halftime and help third-ranked Iowa rally past Nebraska 94-89 in overtime to win a third straight Big Ten tournament on Sunday. "It never gets old cutting the net," Clark said after the black and gold confetti covered the court at Target Center to the delight of another sellout crowd packed with Hawkeye fans. "I feel like we're pretty good at that." Hannah Stalke had 25 points and 9 rebounds for Iowa, which trailed by 13 points late in the first half, while their superstar Clark missed all 9 of her 3 attempts. "You can maybe keep Caitlin down for a half. You're not keeping her down for the whole game," Hawkeyes coach Lisa Bluter said. The all-time NCAA leading scorer finished 5 for 17 from deep, had 12 assists, and hit the dagger three-pointer with 51 seconds left in OT for an 89-87 lead just 16 seconds after Logan Nisley's three-pointer put the Cornhuskers in front. "I knew some shots were going to go in," Clark said. "That's just how it works." Alexis Markowski had 23 points and 13 rebounds to lead Nebraska in a valiant performance that fell short of a second victory over Iowa this season. The Huskers beat the Hawkeyes 82-79 on February 11th. "Nobody else did, but we expected to win," the Nebraska coach Amy Williams, who had tears streaming down her face at the post-game interview podium. Number 1 South Carolina 79, number 8 LSU 72. Malaysia Fulwilly scored a career-high 24 points, including 4 three-pointers, as the Gamecocks held off the Tigers to win the Southeastern Conference tournament title in Greenville, South Carolina. The game was marred by a fourth-quarter fight that led to Carolina's leading scorer and rebounder Camilla Cardoso being ejected, along with 3 of her teammates and 2 LSU players who came off the bench. In the ACC Championship, number 14 Notre Dame, 55, number 10 NC State, 51. Star freshman Hannah Hidalgo had 22 points as the Fighting Irish held off the Wolfpack in Sunday's conference championship game in Greensboro, North Carolina. It marked Notre Dame's first title since 2019. Hidalgo was named the tournament's most valuable player after tallying 6 rebounds and 6 assists. River Baldwin scored 14 points to lead NC State, which was chasing its fourth title in 5 years. In the Pac-12 championship, number 5 Southern Cal, 74, number 2 Stanford, 61. Mackenzie Forbes scored 26 points, and the Trojans beat the Cardinals to win the Pac-12 tournament championship and earn the conference's automatic bid to the NCAA tournament. USC played in the championship game for the first time since 2014, when it also defeated Stanford. Forbes was named the tournament's most outstanding player. Cameron Brink led the Cardinals with 19 points. SoCon Championship. Chattanooga 69, UNC Greensboro 60. Jada Quinn scored 18 of her 32 points in the fourth quarter to lead the Mocs to their 20th Southern Conference Tournament Championship and 17th NCAA Tournament berth with a win over the Spartans in Asheville, North Carolina. Ayana Kalfani had 15 points, 8 rebounds, and 6 assists to lead UNCG. In the A-10 Championship, Richmond 65, Rhode Island 51. Maggie Dugan scored 18 points, and the Spiders added their first Atlantic 10 Conference Tournament title to their first regular season crown with a win over the Rams in Henrico, Virginia. Big South Championship. Presbyterian 60, Radford 37. Brianna Brady scored 21 points to help the Blue Hose beat the Highlanders in High Point, North Carolina, to win the Big South Conference Tournament title and clinch the automatic berth into the NCAA tournament. Now we're turning to NASCAR and Phoenix, Arizona. Bell pulls out emotional victory in the desert by John Marshall. Dateline Avondale, Arizona. Christopher Bell surged into the lead when Martin Truex Jr. was forced to pit and pulled away for an emotional NASCAR Cup Series win at Phoenix Raceway on Sunday. The Joe Gibbs Racing driver's victory comes on the heels of a pair of heartbreaks in the desert. 2 years ago, JGR vice chairman Coy Gibbs was found dead in his hotel room following his son Ty's Xfinity season championship. Bell made it to the Cup Series Championship 4 in November, but a broken rotor spoiled his championship hopes in the season finale at Phoenix. Bell's win in the number 20 Toyota also ended Chevrolet's perfect start to the season after winning the first three races. He is the eighth different winner in 8 races at Phoenix Raceway's Mile Trioval. Chris Buescher finished second and Ty Gibbs was third. Brad Keselowski and Brian Blaney rounded out the top 5. The Phoenix race marked the debut of NASCAR's new aerodynamics package for short tracks in hopes of producing more passing on tracks of a mile or less and road courses. Goodyear also produced tires with thicker treads designed to retain heat and increase lap time falloff. Starting 13th, Bell took advantage of the changes, overcoming 2 slow pit stops to charge back to the front. Bell moved into the lead with 40 laps to go when leader Truex had to pit for fuel and tires. Bell led the final 49 laps for his 7th career Cup Series victory, first since Homestead in October. Truex and his crew made a calculated gamble on lap 217, opting to stay out when most of the leaders went into the pits. The JGR driver stayed in the lead, hoping he would have enough fuel and his tires would hold out long enough to reach the checkered flag. Neither happened, and Truex was forced into the pits. He finished 7th. Now we turn to the PGA Tour, the Arnold Palmer Invitational. The headline is Hot Putting Helps Scheffler Demolish the Field at Bay Hill by Doug Ferguson, Dateline, Orlando, Florida. Scotty Scheffler figured the simple solution to his putting struggles was to quit trying so hard. That's what he did at the Arnold Palmer Invitational, and it wasn't a fair fight. The best in the world from tee to green, Scheffler didn't miss a putt inside 15 feet on the weekend. On a tough Sunday at Bay Hill, he played bogey-free in the final group and closed with a 6-under-66 by 2 shots, the best score of the final round. The result was a 5-shot victory, the largest at Bay Hill since Tiger Woods in 2012. It would be borderline unfair if he starts putting really good, U.S. Open champion Wyndham Clark said after finishing 2nd. I never want to wish ill on anybody, but if it starts putting positive each week, it's going to be really hard to beat. The positive was in reference to the strokes gained statistic, Scotty regarded as the most accurate measure. Scheffler usually is on the negative side. No tournament more glaring than the Memorial last year. He lost 8.5 shots to the field in putting and missed a playoff by 1 shot. His ball striking is, honestly, on another level compared to everyone else right now, Rory McIlroy said. We knew if he started to hole putts, then his sort of stuff would happen. Scheffler was simply unstoppable. He holed a 12-foot birdie putt on the opening hole, built a three-shot lead at the turn, and then poured it on as Clark, Shane Lowry, and Will Zalatoris were simply trying to survive Bay Hill. Scheffler hit a wedge to 8 feet for birdie on number 10. He hit another wedge to 6 feet on number 11. He made key par saves and then poured in a 35-foot birdie on the 15th, letting out a yell with a light fist pump. Scheffler finished at 15 under 273 and won $4 million from the $20 million purse of this signature event. It was his seventh career win, all against some of the strongest in the field. And it came a week before Scheffler defends his title at the Players Championship, which had been his last official PGA Tour win. Now turning to the NFL. Here's this story titled AP Source: Mayfield Staying with Buccaneers. Quarterback agrees to 3-year deal worth $115 million. Dateline, Tampa, Florida. Baker Mayfield is staying with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers after agreeing to a 3-year contract worth up to $115 million, a person familiar with the deal told the Associated Press on Sunday. The person spoke to the AP on condition of anonymity because the agreement, which includes $50 million guaranteed, has not been finalized. The Tampa Bay Times reported Mayfield, 28, will receive $30 million in 2024 and $30 million in 2025, with $20 million guaranteed in the second year of the deal. The quarterback's salary would increase to $40 million in 2026, the newspaper said. The number one overall pick from the 2018 draft threw for a career-best 4,044 yards and 28 touchdowns while cutting down on mistakes that undermined his stints with the Browns, Panthers, and Rams. Pats trade Jones to Jags. Booed and benched the past 2 years in New England, quarterback Mac Jones is headed home to become a backup. The Patriots and new coach Jared Mayo agreed Sunday to trade Jones to the Jacksonville Jaguars for a sixth-round pick in next month's NFL draft, according to a person with knowledge of the decision. And briefly, the Eagles. Philadelphia's six-time Pro Bowl defensive tackle Fletcher Cox announced his retirement. Cox, a first-round pick in 2012, played all 12 of his seasons with the Eagles and holds the franchise record for sacks by a defensive tackle. And Chiefs. According to an AP source, Kansas City and All-Pro defensive tackle Chris Jones agreed on the framework of a 5-year deal late Saturday that includes $95 million guaranteed, making him one of the highest-paid defensive players in NFL history. Now turning to the NBA. Lillard scores 16 in fourth quarter. Bucks defeat shorthanded Clippers. Dateline Los Angeles. Damian Lillard scored 16 of his 35 points in the fourth quarter, and the Milwaukee Bucks beat the shorthanded Los Angeles Clippers 124-117 on Sunday to pick up their first victory on their California road trip. Lillard hit 3 of his 7 three-pointers in the fourth, while Giannis Antetokounmpo had 34 points, 10 assists, and 7 rebounds as the Bucks' superstar duo took over down the stretch. Antetokounmpo and Lillard became only the second pair of teammates since 1980 to record at least 30 points and 10 assists apiece in the same game, according to the NBA. James Harden had 13 points and 11 assists for the Clippers, who played without Kawhi Leonard and Paul George after the team's second game in less than 24 hours. Rockets 112, Kings 104. Fred VanVleet scored 22 points, Jalen Green added 19, and Houston beat host Sacramento, but may have lost Alperen Sengun, who suffered a right knee injury when he landed awkwardly while challenging a shot to Domantas Sabonis in the fourth quarter. Pelicans 116, Hawks 103. Trey Murphy III scored 28 points off the bench, and Zion Williamson added 27 points to help New Orleans defeat Atlanta and complete a perfect three-game road trip. Pacers 111, Magic 97. Tyrese Halliburton and Pascal Siakam each scored 20 points, and Indiana beat host Orlando. The Magic have dropped two in a row for the first time since January 22 through 26. Nets 120, Cavaliers 101. Cam Thomas scored 29 points in 31 minutes. Mikal Bridges added 25 points, and Brooklyn pulled away in the fourth quarter for a road win over injury-riddled Cleveland. Thunder 124, Grizzlies 93. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander had 23 points in three quarters, and Oklahoma City rolled past visiting Memphis, which got a season-high 30 points from G.G. Jackson II. Wizards 110, Heat 108. Kyle Kuzma scored 32 points, and Washington held on in Miami for its second win in a row after ending a 16-game losing streak. Jimmy Butler led the Heat with 23 points. '76ers 79, Knicks 73. Kelly Oubre Jr. had 18 points and 10 rebounds as Philadelphia held host New York to the lowest point total in the NBA this season, winning in the ugly opener of a two-game series. Lakers 120, Timberwolves 109. LeBron James scored 29 points. Anthony Davis added 27 points, 25 rebounds, 7 steals, and 3 blocks, and with Los Angeles defeated the visiting Minnesota. Now turning to the NHL, Monday's games. New Jersey at New York Rangers, 6 p.m. St. Louis at Boston, 6 p.m. Washington at Winnipeg at 6:30 p.m. and the New York Islanders at Los Angeles at 9:30 p.m. For Tuesday's games, Columbus at Montreal, 6 p.m., Detroit at Buffalo, 6 p.m., New York Rangers at Carolina at 6 p.m., Pittsburgh at Ottawa at 6 p.m., San Jose at Philadelphia at 6 p.m., Arizona at Minnesota, 7 p.m., Florida at Dallas at 7 p.m., Anaheim at Chicago at 7:30 p.m., and Colorado at Calgary at 8 p.m., and Vegas at Seattle at 9 p.m. The stat of the day for NHL, 13. Igor Shesterkin made 26 saves for his 13th career shutout in his 200th career NHL game on Sunday for the New York Rangers. It was the second shutout of the season for Shesterkin, who played his first game for the Rangers in January of 2020. And then this story about the NHL. McDavid and Oilers cruise past the Penguins. Dateline, Pittsburgh. Connor McDavid versus Sidney Crosby used to make the hockey world come to a standstill and watch. Not so much these days. Twice in 8 days, two of the game's biggest stars met, and twice in 8 days, McDavid and the Edmonton Oilers handed Crosby and the reeling Penguins, this time in a clinical 4-0 win on Sunday. McDavid scored his 24th goal of the season just over a minute in and added 2 assists. Darnell Nurse scored twice in the third period to break it open, and Calvin Picard turned aside all 41 shots he faced for his second shutout of the season as the Oilers ended a 4-game Eastern road trip on a high note. McDavid had his 118th game with 3 or more points, third most in Edmonton history behind Hall of Famers Wayne Gretzky and Jerry Curry. The Wild 4, the Predators 3 in overtime. Minnesota pulled its goaltender in overtime, and Matt Boldy scored to lift the Wild over visiting Nashville. Marc-Andre Fleury skated off 3 minutes and 30 seconds into OT, giving Minnesota a 4-on-3 advantage. Seconds later, Boldy got a pass from Matt Zuccarello and beat the Predators goalie Juice Saros for the game winner. Hurricane 7, Flames 2. Sebastian Alio and Andrei Sheshkovov each had a goal and two assists to help Carolina beat visiting Calgary. Jalen Chatfield, Brent Burns, Seth Jarvis, Jordan Martinook, and Tivo Teravainen also scored for the Hurricanes. Frederick Anderson, in his second start in 4 days, made 17 saves. Blackhawks 7, Coyotes 4. Colin Blackwell got his first career hat trick, and Connor Bedard had two goals and an assist, leading Chicago over visiting Arizona. It was the Blackhawks' highest scoring game of the season. Islanders 6, Ducks 1. Kyle Palmieri reached the 20-goal mark for the sixth time in his career. Bo Horvat extended his goal streak to 3 games, and New York routed host Anaheim to move into a playoff spot. Now the Around the League column. Avs lose O'Connor for the season. Dateline, Denver. Colorado Avalanche forward Logan O'Connor will undergo hip surgery this week and miss the rest of the season, coach Jared Bednar said Sunday. O'Connor has missed 6 games since the All-Star break, all related to the injury. He had 13 goals and 12 assists in 57 games this season. Bednar said there's no timeline on O'Connor's return or if he will be ready for camp next season. It just depends on what they go in and find and what they end up doing, explained Bednar, whose team begins a 4-game trip Tuesday in Calgary. The Avalanche made a bevy of moves at the trade deadline in an effort to bolster their depth. They acquired defenseman Sean Walker from Philadelphia and center Casey Mittelstadt from Buffalo. Then they added forward Brendan Duhaime from Minnesota and center Yakov Therin from Nashville. They also got back Valeri Nuchinsky, who missed about 2 months after receiving care through the player assistance program. He scored the OT winner against the Minnesota Wild on Friday. And briefly, the Blackhawks. Chicago agreed to a 2-year contract with forward Landon Slaggart on Sunday. The entry-level deal runs through the 2024-25 season with a $912,500 salary cap hit. The 21-year-old Slaggart had 20 goals and 11 assists in 36 games for Notre Dame this season. And the Flyers? Philadelphia coach Don Tortorella was suspended for 2 games and fined $50,000 by the NHL on Sunday for unprofessional conduct directed at the officials by refusing to leave the bench area after a game misconduct. And around the NBA column, Pistons GM responds to heckling fan. Detroit Pistons general manager Troy Weaver had an expletive-laced response to a heckling fan in the stands and pointed the man out to security at Little Caesars Arena. The heated exchange, which was shared on social media, occurred during Detroit's 142-124 loss to the Dallas Mavericks on Saturday night. "You threatened me," the unidentified man was heard saying to Weaver on the video. Weaver declined to comment Sunday. Jeffrey Callaway, a 46-year-old season ticket holder from Detroit, said he was sitting near Weaver when the fan approached the team's GM twice before being escorted away. "The guy that was in the incident with the Red Wings stuff on came over and was pointing at the scoreboard earlier in the game," Callaway said in a telephone interview Sunday. Troy Weaver just shrugged his shoulders and said, "Okay," and the guy went back to his seat. When Jalen Duren got ejected midway through the fourth quarter, the guy came back and told him that he was terrible at his job. Then Troy Weaver was telling the fan he had to leave, and that's when ushers or security walked over. And briefly, the Timberwolves. Minnesota center Rudy Gobert was fined $100,000 by the NBA 2 days after he implied that referee Scott Foster was not calling games fairly and further suggested that gambling is having a detrimental impact on the outcome of the games. It is the fourth time Gobert has been fined for public criticism of officials. And that does it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier. for Monday, March 11th, 2024. I'm your reader, Catherine Moyers. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thank you for listening.